Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for listening to the podcast from the Early Morning Late Show.
It's the Early Morning Late Show with Bill Arnold. The Early Morning Late Show. Get your day started right. Start your day right. It's the Early Morning Late Show with Bill Arnold.
Good morning. It's 4 minutes after the hour. Today is Thursday, October 19th, in the year 2017. So glad you're with us today, and I hope you're off to a good start today. I started today talking about Psalm 37:4, take delight in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart. Always an encouraging psalm to meditate on. I love it. So here in California, there's a story that caught my attention. California dog is recovering from a rattlesnake bite it suffered while protecting her 10-year-old owner. Anthony Borges says his stepson was walking with his mother and the family dog, a boxer named Nala, when they stumbled upon a rattlesnake in their Lancaster neighborhood. Nala faced off with the snake, giving the child and his mother time to get out of harm's way. Nala was rushed to the vet to be treated for the venomous bite on her nose. She's expected to recover and should be back home safe next week. Is there anything these beloved dogs won't do to protect? God bless that little boxer, Nala. Thank you for probably saving a life. That was very cool. All right, we've got Dr. Bruce Ashford with us, and we're going to have a discussion on the evangelical view of transgenderism. We're going to touch on that today, and we're going to also talk about being a political junkie. So just a heads up for you listeners, we might have some adult conversation coming up in the next segment. It's 6 minutes after the hour. We'll take a break and be back with Dr. Bruce Ashford. Good morning. It's 7 minutes after the hour. I've Dr. Bruce Ashford with us on the studio line. And, you know, usually the old adage is measure twice, cut once. I always measure once and go to Home Depot twice. So I'm just looking at all the material I'm trying to cover today with Dr. Ashford. And I'm thinking, oh, I don't think I measured this right because there's so much to discuss. We might have to turn this into a longer segment on its own. But Dr. Bruce Ashford is the provost and professor of theology and culture at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. He's the author of several books, Every Square Inch, An Introduction to Cultural Engagement for Christians, and One Nation Under God, A Christian Hope for American Politics. Good morning, Bruce.
Good morning. Thank you for having me back on the show.
Yeah, let's talk about political junkies and the seven deadly sins of being one.
Yeah, so, you know, some people, most people are aware of what a political junkie is, but for those who are not, you know, it's just a play off of the word junkie, a person who is dependent upon, you know, some sort of drug to keep them high, you know. And so the analogy is that for a number of us who are Americans, we have to have our fix every day by watching the news or watching political opinion shows. We're just very, you know, involved in the political realm. And so, you know, we've got these seven deadly sins, and it just occurred to me that these sins work themselves into every area of life, including politics and public life.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of the motivation for it. You want to walk through them?
I do. I find this fascinating. There's so much material I want to cover with you today. I don't think I gauged it well.
You mean like of my personal sins?
Yeah, we're gonna try to go through those, and we've only got till noon, so let's get started.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Ooh, I didn't know they were so obvious, but yeah. So the first one, we start with pride.
Yeah.
You know, pride is the deepest kind of rebellion. It's a sin that's the root of all other sins because it basically is the self trying to sit on the throne where God should sit. And I think in politics it manifests itself. And let's make this. I'm a political conservative, so I'm gonna look inward instead of outward, instead of looking across the aisle the whole time. I'm going to be able to spot my own sins and the sins of my own political tribe. And when those become apparent, I'm going to not change the subject or shift the blame or anything like that, but to recognize, you know, sin where it manifests itself. And so the if you're to take the Beatitudes, Jesus' Beatitudes, and allow them to correct the seven deadly sins, I would say that humility is the beatitude that corrects pride. Does that make sense?
Oh, total sense. And whether or not you can get to humility, that's another thing.
Right. Not an easy one.
So no, that's a tough one.
Only God can keep us from being a navel-gazing me monkey.
Okay, the next one's a big one, Bruce.
Go ahead.
No, I don't think anybody goes to their pastor and says, "Pastor, I'm really suffering with greed."
Yeah, so, you know, a greedy person is someone who wants the things that God gives us more than they want God himself. And in the political realm, if we're obsessed with things that we can get, like wealth or power or influence or even sex, I mean, whatever it is that power in D.C. will get you, then, you know, that greed leads you to all other sorts of sins. A greedy politician is going to be willing to cheat, lie, collude, be an obnoxious bully that insults people in the public square and hurts them so that he can get what he wants. A greedy politician is someone who wants to appear that he's helping the nation, but really is only helping himself. A greedy policy commenter on TV, you know, one of our favorite talk shows, is a person who cares about talking, but doesn't really care about the people his policies are supposed to help. A greedy opinion writer, I'm an opinion writer, is somebody who wants a large following but doesn't really care about the truth. And so the gospel wants to transform, instead of us obsessing on ourselves and getting things for ourselves, wants to turn us out toward others. So what about mercy? We're told to be merciful people, and when we're having mercy on another person, we're not obsessing on the self but looking toward the other person.
Mm. Love it.
Envy. Envy is when we're very sad because somebody else is very happy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that can infect the entire political realm, you know, that we have a nation full of citizens who resent other people's success. We all think that we're entitled to every success and every good thing. I think, you know, a biblical remedy to that is when Scripture tells us to mourn. Because when we mourn, we are not envying other people who are happy in a way that we're not. What we're doing is comforting somebody who is sad in a way that we're not. So the Bible flips it.
Mm, I like that.
All right, now brace yourself for the next one.
Okay.
I think the years 2016 and 2017 in American politics are characterized by this one especially, and that is wrath. So wrath is not anger. Because not all anger is bad. Wrath is poorly motivated and misdirected anger.
Ooh, and nice distinction, Bruce.
Yeah, and we've got a society who is angry for the wrong reasons and in the wrong way, and that does wrong things with their anger. We will wage wars of vengeance without paying attention to principles of justice. We will have, and I'm not referring to any specific war right now, it's just a general statement. Second, our public discourse is going to be pervasively uncivil. We're going to insult, mock, demean. We're going to have talk show hosts on our favorite outlet who are like rabid chihuahuas, just interrupting and yelling and just inane stuff. You know, you're going to have citizens whose Facebook pages and the commenters on the Facebook pages exhibit uninhibited rage, just angry all over the place.
And Darlene from Waterloo just called and says, don't insult my chihuahua.
Okay. You know, that's a great point. My apologies. Emma Lou, you said?
Darlene, yeah. Emma Lou, doesn't matter.
Darlene, yeah, it's all the same. Elma Roundtree, you know. So how do we fix wrath? So by God's grace, we pray for him to make us meek. Meekness is an amazing biblical virtue, and it is strength under control. It would be a politician who has the strength not to lower himself to the inanity of the person he's debating against in a presidential or vice presidential debate.
Mm-hmm.
That can be strong, and yet at the same time not allow himself to morph into an idiot.
Yeah, Bruce,
a jerk.
Bruce, does it seem like there's a huge closet of anger jackets and people are going and getting one and putting it on and then going about their day?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great metaphor.
Well, I think...
Put our anger jackets on, especially when we're on Facebook talking about politics.
Yeah.
Watching news. Go ahead.
I often think of blind Bartimaeus, who was begging, and when Jesus came by, He got up and took off his begging cloak and approached Jesus, almost as if to suggest he's never going to need it again. You know, because you were defined in that culture by wearing your begging cloak. And the scripture says he got up and took his cloak off and then approached Jesus. And I thought, boy, we're all wearing some cloak, whether it's grace and mercy or if it's, you know, anger or whatever it is that we're leading with. And it's just not good.
That's a great analogy. I think I'm gonna write that down and then use it without...
Please. Oh, no, never. Because yeah. I use your material and I never give you credit. So, yeah.
Okay, well, good. We should be good friends.
Yeah.
You know, so another often misunderstood vice is sloth. So sloth tends to be equated merely with laziness, but sloth is not laziness. Sloth is spiritual laziness.
Mm.
So a slothful person who doesn't desire God and isn't actively pursuing God might actually be very, very busy working on lots of other things in life. In fact, when we're spiritually lazy, we fill our lives with frenzied activities to distract ourselves from our spiritual emptiness. Because if we ever sat there alone to really contemplate and think about ourselves in relation to God, the silence and the solitude would be overwhelming. We couldn't handle it.
Now, we don't want to be alone with our thoughts. That's why they pipe music into elevators.
Yeah, I mean, we have a phone to distract us. You know, our computer to distract us. There's always noise. There's always images in front of our face. And we can't be alone with God. And I think our nation has a gaping hole in our collective spiritual heart. And the answer to that, Jesus says, is to hunger and thirst for righteousness.
Mm. Bruce, we never use the word sloth anymore, do we?
No, we don't, except when we're to refer to a slimy little... creature, you know, like
yeah.
Bug. So we need to overcome that. I mean, I think the reason we don't use the word sloth maybe is that we don't recognize spiritual vitality or apathy when we see it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even on our radar.
Yeah. Bruce, I have to take a break. Jerry from Fargo just called and said, do not make fun of my sloth one more time. He has one in his backyard.
Yeah, I sit corrected.
Talk to Dr. Bruce Ashford. We'll take a break. Be back with more in just a minute. Good morning. It's 19 minutes after the hour. I'm speaking to Dr. Bruce Ashford, and we're having an interesting conversation about the seven deadly sins of political junkies. We're through five of them. Let's just for recap, we've got pride, we've got greed, envy, wrath, and when we last left off, we were on sloth. Now we've got a couple more to go. What is up next, Dr. Bruce?
I want to remind our listeners... Or to give a little personal background, since I was a teenager, I have listened to, it feels like, thousands of talk shows, especially beginning in the 90s. I have watched more talking heads on television than is sand on the seashore. And, you know, every day I read the political news and opinion columns of at least a dozen different outlets or papers. I'm also an opinion writer, political opinion writer. So basically, I have a lot of experience in observing other people's sins, and hopefully, you know, unfortunately, even more experience with my own sins in politics and public life and political engagement. And it was kind of a motivation for me to assess the seven deadly sins in light of politics. And I actually pasted a list of these on my wall a few years ago in a handwritten form, and now I've typed them out as a reminder that it's not okay to lay my Christianity aside when I walk into the public square to engage on public issues. So,
and let me just also tell our listeners that you can find this piece that we're talking about at bruceashford.net.
So bruceashford.net. Please join me there. I publish anywhere from maybe 2 to 4 or 5 articles per week for everyday American Christians, helping to sort of coach us to live Christianly in public life.
Mm-hmm. I also contribute several articles a month to the same website, and they're published under the name Bruce Ashford, even though it's me.
Oh, that was a good one.
Thanks. I just want to be kind of as smart as you every once in a while, even though I never will be.
Let me fake it. Sure how to respond. I was going
right.
to respond that I run a radio show under the name. I said that would be stealing your joke.
Touche. All right, let's do. Let's move to the next one, and that's the big word that starts with L.
That's right. So lust. Lust is the desire to exercise our sexual passion with people other than our spouse. And, you know, lust has a tension to take command, take the driver's seat of the heart and the mind, and drive us and our blind eyes down the path of death, Proverbs chapter 5 and Proverbs chapter 7. And ultimately, we begin to view sexual pleasure as our functional savior. But it's sexual pleasure is a counterfeit God. Sexual pleasure is a good gift from God, but when it's elevated to the status of God, that good thing becomes a God thing and then becomes a bad thing. And it's a counterfeit God, it's a terrible Lord and a dysfunctional Savior. And our society has organized itself largely around the freedom to do whatever we want to with our genitals. And this is deeply, deeply detrimental. The porn epidemic, that's upwards of about 90% of men are seriously and regularly involved in watching and looking at pornography. Pornography teaches us to objectify other people and use them. And then that ripples out into our public square activity, that we objectify and use people, not just sexually, but just in general. Teaches us to treat other people as objects. So and a sexual nation is not only a nation obsessed with porn, but with adultery. High divorce rate. It's one whose TV networks choose their political opinion heads, especially if they're female, based upon their physical appearance. You know, more maybe than their commentator abilities.
Mm-hmm.
And TV audience confirms that choice by continuing to watch. Lustful society does everything it can possibly do to get social, cultural, legal, and political approval for their sexual activities.
Mm-hmm.
And then for the government to pay for, to terminate the consequences of those activities.
Mm-hmm.
That may be born.
Bruce, we have a few minutes left. I want to conclude with the last one. I'm going to reach for my bear claw with raspberry cream cheese, and you go ahead and talk about what the last one is.
Okay, good. the last one is gluttony.
Oh,
and
that's trying to hurt my feelings now.
Yeah, well, you just have to sit there and take it now.
And I guess I have to.
So it's the inordinate and indiscreet enjoyment of bodily things that we want, for example, with eating, we
mm-hmm.
enjoy, we eat quickly, we demand the best food, we eat more than we need, we want it when we want it perfectly prepared. So I think a gluttonous politician is not just one who likes, fried chicken and bear claws inordinately, but one who is enamored with any of the perks that Capitol Hill can give,
mm-hmm.
not just sumptuous meals, but all of the other perks. And gives little thought to the citizens who elected him or her. I think gluttonous citizens on the left and the right can give all kinds of economic theories about what helps the poor and what helps society, all the while giving little or nothing at all to charity. I can think of a couple of politicians recently who gave not one dime to charity. One who gave only money to her own foundation.
Yeah, one was a vice president, and one was also a high-level official.
Yeah, so... this is gluttony.
Mm-hmm.
And so, in conclusion, C.S. Lewis, in his space trilogy, had put some creatures in the space trilogy called the Eldilla. And the Eldilla, when they walked sort of in a slanted manner instead of upright. And Christians are going to be a lot like Eldilla. If we live in a world, a fallen world, that is twisted in the wrong direction, then if we walk upright, it's going to actually look like we're the ones who are slanted in the wrong direction. We're going to look a little strange, a little bit off kilter,
mm-hmm.
when we live in a way that's different from the world. And here's the deal. I think that Bible-believing Christians have a very unique opportunity right now in the United States. We are seeing the rise of the post-religious left and, I think, also a post-religious right, a secular nation with secular-ish parties to represent it. And we have the opportunity to become interesting once again, to regain our moral clarity and the moral strength of our voice, if we can carve out a path of political engagement that is virtuous instead of vicious. And that's really what this series is about, doing that.
Well, Bruce, you've also written an evangelical guide to transgenderism, and we're flat out of time today, but I was wondering if we couldn't plan in the next week or two trying to come up with a whole hour to discuss this. And we also have a visiting a professor here from the University of Northwestern that's become a regular on the show. Maybe we can have a conversation about this and we can invite listeners to call in. And I'm trying to talk into something right now. I should probably be doing this off air.
You know, I think we could do that. Let's try to make it work. We'll find a time on the calendar and get it done.
Awesome. Thank you. Here's your review from today's interview. I laughed, I cried, I cheered.
thank you, I think.
Thanks, Bruce. Have a great day.
All right, you too.
All right. It's 27 minutes after the hour. We'll take a break and be back in just a minute. Good morning. It's 24 minutes until the top of the hour. Dr. Mitch Glaser is already on our studio line. I love him. We're going to bring him on in just a minute. But we live in a very selfish world where everyone thinks their opinion matters more than anyone else's. Dr. Linda Mintel says we must set this aside.
We are so into our own opinion, our own view, the way we think it should go, and we're sort of ignoring the fact that these people are in authority over us. We've come into this culture where everything is you know, valued the same, and yet we're not in the position of leadership. We're not the one who's been given the authority or the power, nor do we have to suffer the consequences of those leadership decisions. So we do have to look at when is it appropriate for us to say, okay, I don't really agree with what this person is doing or saying, but you know what? They're my boss. I need to go along with this. And then there are times when we absolutely have to say, I can't go along with this because of the moral issue maybe involved in it. So there's two different distinctions I want to make. One is when you're feeling morally compromised and you do have to take a stance. But I think those are a little bit clearer in most of our minds. It's these everyday issues where we just kind of think, you know what, my boss is an idiot. I know better. I should be doing whatever I want to do. And that is the cultural seep that we need to be very careful that we guard against in our hearts.
That's Dr. Linda Mintel. If you want to hear that full interview and hear her say the word idiot again, you can go to myfaithradio.com, type in Dr. Linda Mintel and stiff-necked authority. You'll get right to the interview. Dr. Mitch Glaser is with us from Chosen People Ministries. He's already on our studio line. You're in for a big treat. Be back in a minute.
There's no perfect formula for bringing a teenager to maturity, but there are three ingredients that'll give you a good head start. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. First, unconditional love lets them know that there's nothing they can do to make you love them more, and there's nothing they can do to make you love them less. Second, grace gives them room to fail, and then encouragement to learn from their mistakes. And third, truth is the correcting influence that balances their actions with what's right and wrong. Living out the truth also means that consequences come when they step over the line. Love, grace, and truth. Take those three. Flood your home and relationships with it. It's the foundation for raising healthy, godly, and mature young adults.
Look for the new book from Mark Gregston titled, Leaving a Legacy of Hope, when you visit parentingtodaysteens.org.
Hello, we're back. It's 20 minutes till the top of the hour. In, I think it was 1894, a Hungarian immigrant by the name of Rabbi Leopold Cohn said, I want to start a ministry, and he started Chosen People Ministries. Now it's worldwide, missionaries in 16 countries, and I have Dr. Mitch Glaser, the president, on our studio line with me this morning, who is smart, funny, and good-looking all at once. Good morning, Mitch.
Good morning, Bill. Shalom.
Shalom to you.
A face for radio, right?
Yeah, right. Well, we both do. Anyway, thanks for being on the program. I always love your perspective. I love your books. Everything about what you do is just inspiring to me, so thank you. Thank you for being this wonderful person and resource and a person with a great passion and heart for Christ.
Well, I do. The Lord is good.
And we're looking on your spiritual birthday, November of 1970, you got saved.
That's right. That's true. Thank you. That's early birthday wishes.
Yeah, it is early birthday wishes. And I thought it'd be interesting to talk about what's going on with Jewish millennials and what you see among the people that you work with and you know, kids that you know and friends of kids' friends.
Yes.
Yeah. What do you see?
Well, first of all, I have two sisters and a stepbrother and stepsister, and all their kids are millennials, and my two daughters are millennials. So I would say that I have a big ministry to millennials.
You're an authority, Mitch.
Like, you know, I've learned a lot. And we do a lot of ministry among millennials and chosen people because we're old and organizations tend to go through a circular kind of cyclical process. You know, you go around the horn, so to speak. I would say that right now our staff is gradually becoming younger. That's what happens when you're old. I won't tell you what's happening to the older people, but we're definitely becoming younger. And so we're using a lot more of, we're doing a lot more on campus. We're doing a lot more social media, and everything we do seems to end up in video. And so what I'm noticing is that, and also we're doing a lot in Israel among millennials, just to add that, as well as some other countries, but a lot in Israel. So I would say that millennials are generally more spiritual than most non-millennials, but less religious.
Mm.
And I think that was borne out in a recent survey that Barna produced on Jewish millennials, which I think was excellent and very helpful. And in fact, Chosen People Ministries, also working with Lifeway Research, just produced a first ever survey on Christian evangelical millennials and their attitudes towards Israel and the Jewish people. And that's done. We're processing it right now, and it probably will be released after the first of the year. So I can say a little, but not much, because we're still going through the enormous amount of data. We had a sampling of over 2,000 respondents, and so it's quite significant. And we also compared the attitude between Christian millennials regarding Israel and their parents, and to some degree their grandparents, to see how this has been shifting. But back to the Jewish millennials, I would say that Jewish millennials are definitely more open. In fact, I find us doing more campus work, not only in the United States, but in other countries. And that's being driven, I believe, by a new openness on the part of millennials that was not there a decade ago. I would say campus work was just much tougher. But now there seems to be a lot of interest in spiritual things, but they're not necessarily interested in joining an established religion.
Mm. Mitch, this research that Barna did said that the Jewish millennials are probably more free thinking, yet they still really gravitate towards some of their customs and ancient expressions of faith. Maybe you'll tell our listeners a little bit how you understand the response when people say, "I'm spiritual but not religious." You know, we've all heard that so many times. You know, what is this?
Sure.
What does it actually mean?
The Jewish religion. Let me speak from the Jewish
Sure.
perspective. So, the Jewish religion is very precise. Jewish people today are raised with really three options: Reform, Conservative, or Orthodox. There are variations in between them. There's Hasidic Judaism also, which is quite popular. There's ultra-Orthodox Judaism. But among the Reform and Conservative, which are the two largest Jewish groups in the country, though not the fastest growing, Orthodoxy is the fastest growing, according to the Pew report from about 2 years ago. And so there is very little choice for Jewish young people as to how to express their Jewishness. Now, if I could just get into the weeds just quickly.
Sure.
There are two major parts of the Jewish religion, which most people are not generally aware of. There is what I call faith or beliefs and practice. Now, for Christians, belief or faith is the most important. Practice is important too, but it's usually seen in the transformation of character and exhibiting the fruit of the Spirit. It's not the same thing that Jewish people think of when we say practicing your faith. When we're practicing our faith, it means how do we go about doing things? How do we pray? Do we go to synagogue? How do we celebrate the holidays? Do we celebrate the Jewish holidays? How do we marry? How do we bury? How do we provide life cycle rituals for our kids, such as bar and bat mitzvah, circumcision, and so on? And so there aren't many options out there for Jewish young people. And so if you happen to be turned off from more formal Jewish religious activities, well, you might keep some of it, but you won't necessarily belong to a synagogue and you won't necessarily practice the Jewish religion, though everybody likes a good Seder meal. And some of the Jewish, not the Messianic Jewish, but the mainstream Jewish organizations on campus like Hillel or Chabad Lubavitch, which is a Hasidic group, one of their big events is Friday night dinner. So even though a kid may not have been raised celebrating Shabbat and having a Friday night dinner with their family, they knew about it. and their grandmother did it. And sometimes their parents did it once in a while. But the appeal, when you're on campus, you're by yourself, you're in a new place, you're away from your family, and you have safe Jewish people inviting you over to a Sabbath meal, and the food's good, fellowship's good, meet Jewish boys and girls, that's very appealing to the younger generation. But going to Sabbath services the next day would be unappealing. And so culture, food, community, really community is the core, is important, but religious expression. Bill, do you know, I was raised a modern Orthodox Jewish person, which was very different than conservative or reform.
Okay, Mitch, I just want to hit the pause button for a second because I love where you're going with this, and I really enjoy sitting at your feet and learning. So I just have to take a quick break, and we'll come back. We'll resume this conversation. Speaking to Dr. Mitch Glazer, we'll be back in just a minute.
From the rising of the sun to the going down of the same, you are my God, and all I want to do is praise your name.
Good morning. It's 10 minutes until the top of the hour. I'm having a nice conversation with Dr. Mitch Glazer. He's president of Chosen People Ministries. You can go to chosenpeople.com if you want to see more about that. Mitch, when we last left off, you were talking about your heritage growing up.
Right. So, Bill, I was raised in a modern Orthodox Jewish home. I went to Hebrew school 4 days a week, Friday night, Saturday morning services from age 8 till 13. And then when I had my bar mitzvah, to some degree, I bolted. You know, I took the money and ran. And so it was unfortunate. But to think that I, for even one minute, didn't want to be Jewish anymore is ridiculous. I did.
Right.
And I was very involved in the Jewish community. And I was also seeking a spirituality. Unfortunately, I turned to drugs and other things. And then, like a lot of other Jewish people my age, some of us became Boo Jews and Hoo Jews, you know, and these other combining Eastern religions with Judaism. And anything to avoid Christianity, because the stigma of Christianity to Jewish people, the negative stigma because of persecutions and all that stuff. And so I think that my generation raised the millennials. And so where are these kids at? Well, they have an appreciation for the Jewish community. They like bagels and lox, at least most of them. And they enjoy the holidays. And so they follow after what we taught them to some degree. And they also they're probably not in love with formal religion. And they're looking for authenticity in spirituality. They're looking for something that really gives their life meaning, something that works. And so That's what I think we have right now. Now, I know we don't have much time, so I'll stop for a moment, ask a question or two, but I'd love to tell you about something we're doing in Israel that's having impact.
One of the questions I had, and we can talk about what's going on in Israel, I'd love to talk about that, is your millennial kids raised in a Christian home and yet raised with all the Jewish traditions and the Jewish culture and heritage. How do they do when they're out in the culture connecting to people, and how are they sharing their lives with their millennial friends who might be more Orthodox Jewish?
Well, I mean, certainly less than 50% of millennials are practicing one of the forms of Judaism that I described earlier. And so probably a minority of them would be Orthodox, but though oftentimes people use the word Orthodox when they mean religious.
Okay.
And so it's Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox. And so I would say that most of the millennial young people, again, I do think they're more spiritually inclined. I do think they like being Jewish, and the survey bears that out. But I don't think that they are in love with practicing the Jewish religion, primarily because their parents weren't, you know.
Right.
Now there is a shift, and we see this among young Christian evangelicals too, where, unbelievably so, a lot of young evangelical Christians who went to Baptist churches or evangelical free churches or charismatic churches or non-liturgical churches, quite a few have turned to some newer expressions of the faith, where there's a lot of young people, but they're a little more liturgical. A church that I was going to in Brooklyn, that was a Presbyterian church, filled with young, filled with millennials, 200 millennials. I left the church because I was too old. And so there were a couple hundred millennials, and the liturgy, there was strong liturgy there, taking communion every week, moving, going up to the front, saying the Lord's Prayer, sometimes reciting the Nicene Creed, and which is sort of Presbyterian-ish, but the kids who were going this, very few of them were raised liturgically. And so I do see this with my own kids, where they have now found meaning because they have a relationship with God. They're adults, they're in their 30s, so one's a cusper, but they're definitely millennials. But they have found meaning, and a lot of other Jewish millennials have found meaning in their relationship with God. They've discovered Yeshua, Jesus. They know why they're Jewish. They understand the Bible. They understand God's call and creation of the Jewish people. And so nothing is meaningless. It all has meaning, and they love the Bible, thank God. Mm-hmm. And so they tend to actually practice more of Jewish tradition than I do. And just like some of these millennial kids that have become more liturgical who are grow up in Christian homes, I guess our young people are searching for heritage, for rootedness, for stability in an unstable world. And I think that drives them to a more liturgical form of Christianity at times, and certainly a more liturgical form of Judaism at times. And so I would love to say that my kids grew up confused, or, it's not easy being Jewish and it's not easy being a Christian. You put them both together, you've got Fiddler falling off the roof. I mean, it's not easy. It's not easy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yet my kids are not confused, and they're 100% Jewish, 100% Christian, and they're able to survive well in this world. I think this is true of a lot of millennials.
Yeah. Mitch, I hate to say we're out of time, but I would love to get an update on Israel. Maybe there's even a remote chance, if you've got a few extra minutes, the show is just going to wrap up. We can have you record a segment. But for the time being, I need to jump. I'm speaking to Dr. Mitch Glazer, and it's 3 minutes until the top of the hour. We'll be back in a minute. That wraps up the show. Thank you to Dr. Mitch Glazer. I'm going to keep him on. We're going to talk more. Many Christians are interested in Israel. We'll have that conversation later. Have a great day. I will see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.